from the Art Center in Carrboro. You're listening to Claudio Speakeasy at Radio Theater, a program that has fascinating guests, lively talk and conversation, community news, storytelling, and a look at our local entertainment scene. Good radio and always a few surprises. Now here's Claudio.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning us in. Wonder if you can give me a little more juice on hearing myself in the headset.
How's that, Claudio?
Try 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. Might just have a weak headset. I'll have to deal with it. Good morning, folks. This is Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater. Thank you for tuning us in, wherever you're listening from. I'm going to be introducing a novelist, actress, comedian by the name of Nicole Burgess, or Nicole I. Burgess. And she's going to be promoting her book entitled Ingrid Darling. She lives and writes in Raleigh, North Carolina. She holds a BA from Meredith College. She is a web TV host, model, actor. Her other publications include a short story, Vérité, which she is currently translating into French. In her spare time, she enjoys fencing, playing chess, and traveling. Ingrid Darling is her first novel. And her name again is Nicole Burgess. Good morning, Nicole, and welcome.
Good morning, Claudio. Thanks again for having me on your show.
If you folks remember, she was on a few shows back with the comedy troupe, the Improv. We had all kinds of fun that day.
Yes, with humor therapy. That was
indeed
a lot of fun. We did some improv and had some jokes.
Yes.
That was a good time.
Oh, yeah. I like that. To tell you the truth, I found out that I was more comfortable with that form of comedy than trying to memorize something and be funny.
Oh, yeah.
You know, feed me something on the spur of the moment, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'll pull it off because I'm responding, as opposed to going in there and getting the stage fright and thinking, God, I hope I can pull this off.
Yeah, I hope I can remember my lines.
Unless you're Richard Pryor, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Who could just walk on stage and have people laugh.
Yeah, definitely.
These amazing expressions. At some point, probably 10 past 10, we're going to be interrupted by a quick phone call from the mayor of Lizard Lick, literally the man who put Lizard Lick, North Carolina, on the map. And they also have some kind of a cable show going on. I forget the name of that, but I know Lizard Lick plays a big part in the title. And he's going to catch me up on something going on with the, I think somebody's, a very prominent soul is retiring. It's got to do with military and police. I'm going to help him film it this weekend, so he'll catch us up for a few minutes, though that will interrupt my interview with Nicole for a little bit. But in the meantime, we might as well just go ahead and sail on.
Sure.
What was the inspiration behind your book? And after talking about that a little bit, I'm going to just talk about you in general. So we're going to go all over the place.
Yes. Well, I first wanted to mention that my book is available on Amazon.com.
Absolutely.
As well as BarnesandNoble.com. And for anyone who lives in Raleigh or Durham, North Carolina, it's available at the Quail Ridge Bookstore in Raleigh, as well as the Regulator Bookstore
in Durham. Both well.
Yes. So,
and is there a contact information to you directly in case anybody's interested?
I do have a website. It's nicole-burgess.com, and there is an info section for anyone.
And Burgess is B-U-R-G-E-S-S.
Yes, that's correct. But you know, back to your question, the inspiration behind the novel was I wanted to write a story that a lot of people in my age group between college age and mid-30s, 40s, and even on up could relate to, a character that conveys whatever emotional issues that they're going through, whatever personal, private, public problems people are experiencing. I found that a lot of my friends were looking for someone to relate to in our society. You know, we live in a society that's we're pumped, we're constantly bombarded with reality television, and it's really not real.
You really have to find a way to discover yourself in the midst of a lot of rubble.
Yes, exactly. And it's hard to find yourself when you're watching people get sloppy drunk on television and start fights with one another, and you sort of lose sense of what it means to really be, you know.
Yeah.
So
and sometimes the media can really remind you of a witch hunt, depending on what you're tuning into.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess the inspiration for me was to write a novel that had that sense of reality to it, but it's fiction. Mm-hmm. However, I wanted to write it so that it seemed real. So a lot of the
You know, there's always the curiosity of asking somebody about their first novel, because I'm sure there'll be many more. But saying it's fictional is true in only one degree.
Yes.
You are your own resource, so it's not so much fictional from the author and the author's psyche as it is just creating a character to impersonate that.
Exactly. And I, you know, a lot of people, especially people that know me personally, will realize that a lot of situations that the character
reads in the page,
through,
uh-huh, mm-hmm,
yeah,
I
like,
know who that is.
So, but I, at the same time, I also wanted to have that sense of fiction too, so that it isn't directly related to me. It is about a character going through situations that we can all relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing is that even though it is a female character and I am a female author, I feel like I can appeal to a male audience as well. And I've gotten feedback from my male readers saying that it doesn't seem so. It's not like, oh, it's a girl.
It's not totally effeminate.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It's not that, quote, girly book. So I wanted anyone and any age group, preferably not the younger ones because it's got very adult material,
mm-hmm.
But anyone in any age group to be able to read it and relate to it. And I think
that's a pretty broad and noble aspect there. I like the idea because you certainly had to open up a creative aspect in yourself, mm-hmm. to accommodate what you're talking about, and
yes.
that's the true challenge.
Yeah, exactly. And I had to tap into places that I didn't really know existed,
mm-hmm.
because being a writer, as you know, you do have to go into the deep recesses of your mind to pull out what you.
And it is amazing what memory has stored.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you things you would never have thought of unless you had a powerful reason to pull them up. But all
yep.
of a sudden you realize, oh, I know about this.
Yeah.
I have some idea about that. It's Ray Bradbury once referred to his own psyche that provided him with all this inspiration and then also analyzed some of his characters. He said, how poorly I understood what my psyche was actually absorbing and picking up and mm-hmm. giving to me now.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you?
Yeah. So, and that's how it is. It's you don't realize that you've retained memories from certain places. It, even if it's like a glimpse at something, you
mm-hmm.
you remember it and it's
yeah.
in there. And to be able to pull it out and use it in your work is very cool. And that's what I attempted. I think I've succeeded at doing it. But
I think another thing the average person that doesn't write doesn't fully realize is when an author creates dramatic characters or creates a situation, that author becomes so involved in that
mm-hmm.
while creating it, while writing it, that if it tugs at your heartstrings, mm-hmm. the author spent a lot of time crying and being emotionally moved by
yes.
the story created
mm-hmm.
long before the reader.
Yes.
Because I know I've written pieces that had me sobbing.
Exactly.
And I had to get
too.
Away from the table.
It's funny, I actually can read through some of my work and I'm like, oh my God, I start like
yeah.
tearing up and I'm like, wait, I wrote that. Like, what am I crying for? But I think you're right.
But no, it's almost like it's an experience for you as
mm-hmm.
well. You're the author of it, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in many respects, it's coming through you.
Exactly. And in creating the characters, I find that, you know, some of my characters are more more outspoken than the others.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that voice, it is inside of me. I feel that in writing a novel or a book, I feel like as the author, you almost have to tap into your latent schizophrenia, if that makes
yes.
sense, because you are every character.
It's all there for a reason.
And
yeah.
you convey every single emotion that the characters express, and you have to release it.
One of the most haunting and also most challenging as a writer for me statements I ever heard from another friend, another writer, was Carl Jung making the statement, when you dream, always remember that everybody in the dream is you.
Exactly.
And did that give me a mental challenge.
Yeah, it's definitely out there. It reminds me of the movie Inception. I actually really
I have yet to see that.
It's great.
It's
along that same lines. It's, you know, the dream, it's a dream within the dream, and then
mm-hmm.
you kind of have the sense like who's really dreaming? Is it the main person, or are they all projections of the dream? And
yeah.
that's kind of how it is. That's kind of how it is when you write as well, cuz each character is a projection of yourself.
It is. It's what you can relate to
mm-hmm.
and then how well you can separate yourself.
Exactly.
And who knows what we're really separating, because we are so many levels.
Exactly. And we're all so connected on so many levels.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to, for me, to be able to express how I feel about myself, my family, my friends, society, the world, is through characters. And which is why I also do, I'm an actress and I do improv, because improv is my sort of stand-up way of...
I can see that coming in very handy.
Yeah, I get to be any character I want at any point, at any time. So it's
and if any of you folks are curious about that, you can go to a few podcasts back and see her on the show.
Yes, definitely.
Or listen to her on the show anyway. But yeah, I can imagine how that feeds into creating characters on the spur of the moment, mm-hmm. and then taking them somewhere.
Yeah, it's a good time. I enjoy it.
What was there a particular thing that moved you to wanting to? It sounds like we got a phone call. Could be the mayor calling, so we're going to interrupt this for a moment. We've been saved by the bell.
Woohoo!
You're listening to Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater here on WCOM. We have a call in. Caller, are you Mr. Mayor?
I'm the one and only from downtown Lizard Lick, North Carolina.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the legendary mayor of Lizard Lick, one of the main reasons Lizard Lick is known worldwide, and I can attest to this because I was walking around St. Thomas in a Lizard Lick University T-shirt, and somebody asked me if I knew you.
Well, you know, I remember when you was down there, I mailed you a letter, and the next thing I know, you was knocking on my door, and I got a receipt back from them that says Claudio has left the building.
This was actually in 1985.
But you beat the letter back if you remember that.
This was in 1985, and I invited you because I had a week to go to come and join me on the schooner Oriander, which was owned by, I was chefing for Rush at the time, the Canadian rock band. And I said, come on, if you want to see a really unique place, you can come stay with me on the schooner for a little while. And I never heard back from you, so I figured, I might return to the States a little earlier. So next thing you know, I'm at your door.
I thought you were on a slow boat to China. I didn't know.
So what's up, Doc?
We've had some good times, haven't we, Claudio?
We've done some things.
You remember, you was on stage here in Wendell at performing with the Baker School of Dance one time. And
I remember.
And you says, in your poem, you says, or your recitation.
Actually, it was a monologue.
Does anyone care? No.
Yes.
Silence all over the crowd, and I cut out and I says, I care.
Yeah.
And it got you broke up.
I heard that in the background. I was delivering a monologue that was part of, what was that show? They were performing chorus. I think it was a chorus line.
Yeah, it was a dance chorus there.
And so I was opening with the opening monologue from that, and part of the language was, "Does anybody care?" And I hear this voice from the audience, "I do." And he tripped me up, man.
Kind of got you broke up now a little bit.
Yeah.
So how's things going for you up in that part of the world in Chapel Hill area?
Well, they haven't kicked me out of the station yet, so I'm still here.
Okay. Well, we've got some good news coming up soon. We'll be doing some work up at the convention center here in West Lizard Lick. We're having to do some filming there, and I was going to ask you to join me to give me a hand about Saturday about 2 o'clock. We've got a gentleman that's been in service for about 30 years, and he's retiring, and so they're going to have his whole regiment, I understand, down to his retirement party.
Yeah, explain what this is, because you told me the entire police department was going to be there, as well as some military folks. I understand Donnie from the head of police in Raleigh, right?
Yeah, the sheriff's department, the police, local Wendell Police Department is going to be there, and the highway patrol to direct traffic. I think that place will hold about 5,000 people there.
You sure you want me to show up? I could get you in trouble.
Well, I hope you show up, because I want you to give me a hand with some
I'll do it.
Historical filming there.
And
but,
so what,
it's going to be a great time.
So who is this gentleman? And give us a little background on he's retiring, or what is the occasion for all this?
It's Mr. Gray. He's been in the service, and he got all kinds of distinguished awards. And it's Bishop Mangum's son-in-law, which is his name is Gray.
And what's his?
I like my hair.
What's his claim to fame? I'm trying to let the audience know why this is going on and why it's such a big deal.
Well, he's retiring. He's retired from the service, and also he's becoming a minister too for the Helping Hand of God.
Oh, I see.
And so this is going to be a dual celebration as he is inducted into the ministry in a new church that's coming up in Zebulun. So it'll be 2 o'clock at Saturday afternoon this weekend, and anybody's invited to come by and take a look at the crowd there and the people. I think some of the people from Fort Bragg is going to be here.
And
it's going to be an exciting day for us all here in West Lizard Lick.
I'll meet you at 11, and you're buying breakfast.
You buying?
I said you are. I got you first.
But we're looking forward to it, tell you. What else is new on your agenda? You got anything you're carrying on lately?
At some point, I want to plan on having, you know, having you come on the show in person and giving us the complete history of Lizard Lick, and I'll do a few performance pieces to accommodate all that.
Oh, that sounds great.
There's some pretty famous roots that go back in, in that entire situation. But beyond all that, just basically been trying to kick the can down the road and make a living.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got this Ron Shirley and them down here at Lizard Lick.
I was going to ask you about that show. What is that show called?
It's called True TV. We're all worked up, True TV. Ron and Bobby and Amy and Crazy Dave. And they got me involved in a couple of three series there coming coming up.
The record company, basically.
Yeah, it's really good entertainment. It couldn't happen that way, but it's good entertainment. And I appreciate them taking it. From me, you know, we did the Lizard Lick Festival for about 20-some years. And then I kind of retired it from that. And so Ronnie kind of jumped in and took over the advertisements and the publicity and stuff. He's done a real great job. Matter of fact, my son-in-law was going across into Mexico, and he had to show his ID, and it said Lizard Lick Road. And that guy said, oh, you know them people in Lizard Lick that run that towing service? He said, yeah, we live right on the end of the road there.
Anytime anybody sees me and knows that you and I are friends, they ask me about that show. And I have yet to watch the first episode, so I have no idea.
I sat up last night and watched some of it, and there's some crazy things that go on. And it's all in fun, and it's real good entertainment. It's one of the top repo shows that is on TV.
I'm going to have to borrow a copy from you then. I don't get cable.
And, you know, Connie Gay was from Lizard Lick. He's the founding father of the Country Music Association. In,
and your great-great uncle, yes.
Yeah, he was my great uncle. And he had he coined the name Town and Country Music. They used to call it hillbilly music, and they changed it over to Town and Country. And had people on there like Patsy Cline was under contract with him.
Elvis Presley.
And let's see.
Elvis Presley was on that too. I know that.
Johnny Cash and Minnie Pearl was all appearing on these shows, and there was Charlie Daniels, Marcus McBride, Brad Paisley, Tex Ritter.
It's amazing what comes out of Lizard Lick, folks.
Yeah, sure. It's got a lot of anybody out there would like to just punch in Connie B. Gay, and they'll give you a list and a picture of him. He sent me the first photo of him when he had a beard, and I was tickled to have that to put on in my book.
I remember the time you had the Lizard Lick Festival. You had me performing there, and somehow got Connie B. Gay to send me a letter communicating just his gratitude for the fact that I was performing at Lizard Lick. A telegram.
Yeah, it's a regular telegram. We got a lot of telegrams from Nashville, Tennessee, when we had him down here for Connie B. Gay Day. And I had some celebrities that come in. Bobby McClam was here performing, too, at one time. He's a country comedian. And we had a lot of fun. It's been great for 20 years, and I just slowed down. I think I got old.
Somehow that just happens. Can't do much to stop it.
Hey, you know, you got the name Speakeasy. Well, back in my days, we had speakeasies. I was born in 31, but that was during the mafia days.
Mm-hmm.
They had prohibition, and they didn't sell nothing except moonshine back then. But they had a lot of speakeasies.
Well, anybody messes with me here, I'll call in the mafia.
There you go.
But that was actually what inspired.
Mafia. We have a security down here that with a one-man security, it's we got a shotgun that shoots 12 times and throws rocks for 15 minutes. So we don't want to be anybody getting stoned down here, so they better behave themselves.
I think that happened to me once or twice. I got hit on the head before I saw you.
Well, it's good talking to you, and I look forward to seeing you possibly on the weekend.
Well, I'll see you on Saturday, and I mean it. You are buying breakfast.
Well, Shirley's going to pack me a lunch, so I'll give you part of it.
Good.
We got some ham hock and collards and some good fried back meat. Don't that sound good?
I'll take my aspirin before I see you.
Yeah, I believe you would.
Well, listen, thank
you. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you this weekend. Good talking to you.
Thank you for calling in, and at some point plan on coming to do a show with me.
We'll do that. We'll take a break.
Take care of yourself.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, the mayor of Lizard Lick. we might as well at this point go to some music, and then we'll
a little
regroup
music,
and
Claudio.
Go back to Nicole. Yeah,
sounds good. Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. Remember, you're listening to 103.5 FM Community Radio for Chapel Hill and Carrboro, WCOM. Thank you so much for making us a part of your day.
Look around you. One in four kids in the U.S. faces hunger. It's not always easy to see the signs, but in this land of plenty, there are kids who don't know where they'll get their next meal. Join Share Our Strength and take the pledge to end childhood hunger here in America by 2015. Learn how at nokidhungry.org. Their next meal could come from you.
I'd like to tell you that your host, Claudio, is available as a poet with a one-man band for house concerts, performing original and traditional literary readings. Claudio is well known as a classical poet and master storyteller. His website is claudioarts.com. Now back to Claudio.
Hello, we're on again. I'm going to read from the back cover of Nicole Burgess's book, Ingrid Darling. Confusion and lack of direction seem to be the driving force in Ingrid's world, yet are far from what she wants out of life. Realizing that her desires are leading her further astray, Ingrid decides to free herself from the bondage of attachment and seek happiness elsewhere. With hopeful determination, she moves to Manhattan, makes new friends, and travels the world, only to be faced with the same problems all over again. Unless Ingrid can find solace elsewhere, her life will continue to travel the same paths, and she will lose herself before finding true happiness. This imaginatively composed novel crosses boundaries of tradition as it follows the struggles of a young woman on a journey towards discovering her true self. Full of robust prose, this endearing story is captivating, emotional, and conveys a message that is powerfully inspiring. And here we have the lady herself, Nicole Burgess.
Hello.
I just wanted to go ahead and say that. You've kind of said it in so many words already, but hey, I've cheated in reading off the back cover. Making this show up as we go along today, honey.
Of course. Thank you for reading the back cover.
Get yourself closer to the microphone.
Oh, there you go.
You know how to work a mic, girl.
Yes, I do. I also just wanted to reinforce that my book is available on Amazon.com.
Absolutely.
As well as BarnesandNoble.com. And for local listeners. It's available at Quail Ridge Bookstore and The Regulator in Durham.
And this particular podcast, the show you're listening to right now, will be up in a day or two and downloadable for free for anyone that's interested. Give us your website one more time.
And my website is www.nicole-burgess.com.
And what made you feel this obligation to come out with a story of this nature now? Does it have more to do with what you see happening around you, or did it have more to do with a certain sense of self evolving?
Well, it was both, I think. We all evolve naturally as our lives go on, and for me, it was more obvious that things were changing mm-hmm. in myself and around me. As well, I was noticing that, like I'd mentioned earlier, the reality television mm-hmm. Bombardment, music is just sort of taking an interesting direction as well. And I just was finding that there's a lot of chaos around us. It's really hard for everyone, for us to hear the peace, hear the quietness.
And just to ponder that very point for a moment, it's that there's an entire culture of youth, entire generation, really, that you could say was raised more by computer and television than by parenting skills, because the parents were working and that was the babysitter.
Exactly.
Or that's what the babysitter put on if there was a physical one.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole consciousness that we have to find ways to break through, because it is not necessarily a consciousness that comes from human-to-human interaction.
Exactly. I definitely think that there's a paradigm shift is necessary. An elevation of consciousness is necessary, because we are being clouded and distracted by technology. And it is necessary for our own growth as humans. It's natural. We evolve
because
differently.
If we're not careful, it can shape our prejudices.
It can. And it is interesting that you mentioned that children these days are almost lost in technology, because when I was growing up, I was outside all the time.
Mm-hmm, me too.
I was always playing. I didn't even want to sit in front of the television. Sitting in front of the television was almost boring.
They didn't have TV in Africa, so I was very fortunate in that sense. I had to make up my stories.
Exactly, and that's where imagination comes from. And,
right.
And children these days, I can't speak for everybody because I'm not a child and I'm not growing up in this time as a child. However, I find that my imagination and the people in my generation and older have more of an imagination than kids these days might, just be simply because they're so distracted by technology, whether it's their iPhone, their iPad, their iPod, their Kindle, their this video game, their
and
that
it,
video game.
It's so much what they relate to that even as far as an imagination goes, they haven't cultivated an imagination that goes very far beyond that, because mm-hmm. that's their ultimate resource.
Yep.
That's what they fall on. That's what they go to.
Exactly. It's as if they are leaning on the imaginations of their prior generation's creativity to develop further.
Somehow, or yeah,
so
exactly.
I feel like it is a sort of stunting of imagination. I do think it's necessary for people to get outside.
And one of the best proofs of that is when you look at Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Everything has become formulaic. If they've had one success, they repeat it five times.
Exactly.
And it was, in some cases, was boring to begin with.
Exactly. So. There are remakes in films all the time. It's hard to see something brand new.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And quality seems to be determined by how much money everybody paid that went to go see the movie, when in fact that has very little to do with quality.
Nicole, I'd like to ask you something. When you were a child, elementary school and then later high school, where did you grow up?
Yes, I grew up in New Jersey, in Long Valley. And Long Valley was, it's funny because most people know New Jersey these days as, you know, Jersey Shore or
Jersey
or Turnpike, kind of industrial. But I grew up in a really beautiful area, rolling hills, orchards, horse farms. So I was constantly outside. I was, if we wanted strawberries or apples, we would go to the orchard or the patches to pick them. And so
it is known as the Garden State, after all.
Exactly. And so it became a very interactive with nature type of experience for me as a child.
I was wondering, because you really do not have a North Carolina accent, and can you hear that, Claudio?
I would say that hers is delightfully just sort of
right,
middle
America.
It's just a spirit speaking.
So I can just go anywhere,
yeah,
and
man.
Just be.
Well, New Jersey is a varied state. It's small, but everyone has this image of factories and pollution and mm-hmm. crowded places.
Yeah.
But if
mm-hmm.
you go to Northwest or Southern New Jersey, it's rural.
But mm-hmm. Rocco does make a point, because generally anybody coming from that region has some kind of a Jersey accent. It's whether it's, you know, barely audible or very audible.
I think my accent was a lot stronger when I moved down here, but I got teased, you know, when I was 11 when I moved down here. So I came in these long pigtails and I was talking in a Jersey accent. It was so strong. You know, it just came out. So I learned to hold it back, I guess. But like I said, I moved down here when I was 11, moved to Durham, North Carolina, and went to high school and went to middle school, high school in Durham, and then I went to NC State for college for 3 years. Then I took a couple years off, and then I ended up going back to school at Meredith, where I graduated from.
Have you ever had any desire to go back up north?
I like the north, but I like the weather in the south. So
I think that's why most of them are coming here now.
Yeah, if I do move, it'll either be further south or to the west coast. Unless something comes up and, you know, someone's like, hey, move to New York, we got a great deal for you, then I'll go.
Well, you never know where the arts will take you, for one thing.
Exactly.
New York is certainly a capital in that regard.
But
after living there for a year myself and running a bar called the Blue Star Bar on 106th and Broadway, I lived on 96th and Broadway, ran a bar on 106th and Broadway, and my boss was the rugby coach from Columbia University. So we had all kinds of rugby players. I never had a problem getting anybody kicked out. But after being there for close to a year, I decided it's a great place to go back to as an artist. But I don't really want to go back and live there, you know, full-time. As an artist for a few weeks at a time or a month at a time, I can handle that. But that much cement every day is too much.
Exactly. And I was actually going to mention something else. Having grown up around green and forest and woods, I enjoy nature, and to not be near nature is not good for me. I feel like my spirit is almost hindered. And I love New York for the simple fact that it's this big metropolis and everyone all over the world just loves this place. But at the same time, it's a concrete jungle.
Yeah, very much so.
And you have to go to Central Park, in order to find green.
And if you look at Central Park from the air, it's like, God, look at this beautiful piece of nature imprisoned by everything around it.
Exactly. And then there's a body of water around that. And so it's like you're there and you feel wonderful. But then what I notice every time I go into New York, you notice that you start picking up your pace. You start walking faster. You start driving faster. You start honking your horn faster.
It has its own energy, yeah.
And so, and I realize that happens in most cities. The energy is very concentrated, so it's just kind of bubbling around, and everyone's just on their phones, just being chaotic without even realizing that that's what's happening.
Well, driving into Manhattan from New Jersey, soon as you get into Manhattan, you go through the Lincoln Tunnel or the Holland Tunnel or the George Washington Bridge, as soon as you're in Manhattan, you can feel that electric in the air. It's amazing. It really is. I've never really experienced that anywhere else.
I totally agree. I have to say, unlike any other place I've lived, and I've traveled the world pretty extensively, but New York City, Manhattan in particular, was the only place it was cool to be an artist. Where they loved you for it. If you weren't one, you weren't cool.
Yeah.
And that was in some ways like a homecoming. I mean, the artist in me drank that wine.
I think that's why a lot of people seeking to fulfill a career in the arts go to New York first.
It's almost a challenge. If I can do it there, I can do it anywhere, as the song says. Right?
However, you know, I think these days there's so many people that are up there so it's hard.
8 million, right, or more
in
that particular area. So, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, why don't we go to a little more music?
Claudio, sounds good to me. You're listening to WCOM Community Radio. Support for the station comes from our underwriters as well as our contributors and volunteers. We are your voice in Chapel Hill and Carrboro, our community. Thank you.
you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
All the radio you'll ever need is community radio, WCOM, Chapel Hill, Carrboro. Also online at WCOMFM.org. Now back to Claudio.
And we're in the studio with author, actress, dancer Nicole Burgess. I figured I'd better go ahead and acknowledge my underwriter, the Apex Arts Council. They've got all kinds of things going on, and you can just look them up. Just type in the Apex Arts Council, get to the website, and find out everything that's going on. The president of the Apex Arts Council will be back on my show on April 16th. And I think if I have any luck, I will have Bill McClymont as my co-host, since Rocco might not be able to make that one. But
when is that going to be?
It's the 16th. I think you may have mentioned that you're going to be out of town.
It's possible.
Okay.
It is. We'll see.
Good.
You know my schedule.
Just throwing a hook in the water here in case I need another coach.
There is no schedule.
Yeah, right, I know. Anyway, so wanted to make that acknowledgement so I can have done it at least once during my show and not get spanked or slapped on the wrist. And here we are. Back to you, Nicole. You know, I want to appeal a little bit to the actress and the dancer aspect of your life. Mm-hmm. What are some of the inspirations there?
Well, I've been dancing my whole life, ever since I can remember.
Since your Jersey days?
Since my Jersey days, yes. And I did ballet, tap, jazz, modern, lyrical, all the way up through high school. So I was on a competition dance team and a competition cheerleading squad when I was in high school.
Goodness.
I was captain of my dance team in high school as well. And I've always enjoyed dance. Mm-hmm. And I think dance for me was a precursor for the stage because in high school I also did musicals and I did choreography for musicals. So I did the choreography for West Side Story as well. Fantastic. As Grease. I did the choreography for Grease.
Okay.
And I won like a little award in high school, so that
fantastic.
Was fantastic.
Really, well, you were definitely indoctrinated with those two shows.
I loved it. So it was my precursor for the stage. From there, I was interested in theater, but not so much. I was more focused on dance, and got to NC State for college and did a couple underground dance troupes and then took a break. And then I just decided I like to act. So, mm-hmm. And got into web TV hosting. And from there, I joined an agency. And then after that, I started doing little short films, commercials here and there.
Good.
And then somehow it looped me back to theater, so it looped me back to improv. So it's very interesting.
I really don't think that's a departure at all. So improv, I mean, you take from everything that you've learned and take improv as the quote unquote written line.
Exactly, and I think for me, dance allowed me to get used to being on stage and being in front of people and performing.
No doubt.
Because I think people who are not familiar with improv, familiar with comedy, they don't realize that you are up there in front of people and you're just kind of showing face. It's not scripted. It's just what you do.
It takes nerve.
It does, and it's very easy to get nervous. So I just, you know, revert back to my dance days.
You kind of have to block it out too. And mm-hmm. I make it a point too. Whenever I'm doing a show, people ask me, "How do you avoid stage fright?" Is I don't even think about the show until I'm on there facing the audience, and then it's too late. Mm-hmm. You just got to get on with it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been asked before, like, aren't you scared? Aren't you nervous? And I'm like, no, it's what I do now because it's part of my bones.
But if you spend too much nervous energy thinking about it ahead of time, mm-hmm. it can definitely sort of give you that little nervous energy. But
of course,
sometimes that nervous energy works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on what role you're playing
or what character.
Yeah, exactly.
That comes out exactly.
Yeah, right.
But Nicole, I'd like to ask you, have you ever heard of Marcel Marceau?
I have not. No.
Well, Claudio was very close to Marcel Marceau. And would you say he was a dancer?
I would definitely say that. He was the world's greatest pantomime, the pantomime that all other pantomimes mimic.
Wow.
He was inspired by Charlie Chaplin and the Three Stooges.
I love Charlie Chaplin.
Well, if you like Chaplin, you'd love Marceau's moves. Mm-hmm. And Marceau can have you belly laughing without any words at all.
Really?
Just by he did this thing called the Lion Tamer, where he's like in the circus and he's holding these rings for the lion to jump through, and he shows you that the lion's not doing what he wants to do. But all the only thing you're seeing on that stage is Marcel himself. But you know exactly what's going on. You can see the lion. Mm-hmm. You can see what he's creating.
That's great.
And we met years ago and became very close friends. Wow. As a matter of fact, he endorsed my book, Seafarers.
Oh, wow.
But why were you bringing him up?
Well, you showed me some of the letters,
the correspondence
this
yes.
morning before yes. we went on the air.
I had written him a tribute called Marceau-esque, and he liked it so much that he sent me a self-portrait from his studio in Paris.
Oh, wow.
Just as a thank you and saying how much he liked the poem. And some years ago, too, he was concerned about me not having an agent, so he asked his own agent at the time, based out of New York City, to represent me as well. That's like having Charlie Chaplin ask his agent to represent you. And I was talking about being humbled and honored.
Mm-hmm.
And she enthusiastically said yes. She was quite elderly at the time, but was happy to take on another client, and then died within a few weeks.
Oh, gosh.
So my shot at having an agent went with that.
Wow.
But Nicole, this fellow was so popular at one time. I mean, he was on television at least once or twice a month on mm-hmm. shows.
With Red Skelton. And
I may have seen him before, especially if he's linked. You said Charlie Chaplin was his understudy?
Not his understudy, his inspiration. Charlie Chaplin and the Three Stooges.
Okay.
But that was basically...
Claudio's getting a picture.
Oh, wow.
I'm just showing it a picture.
Yeah,
you folks can see it through the microphone.
Yeah, he looks
and
vaguely familiar. Mm-hmm.
He was so popular on all of the variety shows, the late night shows, and he was so talented with what he did. No one else could do what he did better.
No, mm-hmm. no. He's considered to this day the Shakespeare of pantomime.
Wow.
And anybody that's in the business knows who he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's interesting that you mentioned Charlie Chaplin because he's one of my great inspirations.
Yes.
And it's funny because when I started getting back into comedy and in theater and improv, I just started watching religiously these Charlie Chaplin films, and I was so amazed that he would write, direct, and act and mime, and he was so emotional without even saying anything. And it's
and what people
amazed.
Tend to overlook is he was one of the great romantic figures of his day.
Mm-hmm.
This guy had more women than you could chase with a stick.
Wow,
so,
I believe it.
And you don't see that in the characters he portrays because he's playing these humble little characters, but there was the whole different macho romantic side to Charlie Chaplin. He was almost scandalous in the other regard.
Especially in Hollywood back
yeah,
then,
right.
I'm sure. That's great. Yeah, Charlie Chaplin was definitely one of my, and as well as Lucille Ball.
Oh, no doubt.
Oh my gosh, she's fantastic.
There's so much more, it seems, that went into any art form mm-hmm. back in those days. It's so mm-hmm. much of it is taken for granted now, or sort of surplused by special effects or media. Even singers. There's mm-hmm. so many singers now that have technical aspects added to their voice when they're
mm-hmm.
in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the raw product.
It goes back to what we were saying earlier, the sort of bombardment with technology.
It's
just chaos now. You can't really see true beauty in anything anymore because it's so watered down.
It's manufactured.
And I agree, especially with the Lucille Ball, with I Love Lucy, shows like that. I would love to have like a revival of shows like that mm-hmm. where it's raw comedy. It's
I think
raw.
They've just started some kind of a Lucille Ball show on Broadway.
Oh, really?
I heard that somebody's doing Lucille Ball.
Mm-hmm. I feel like film... even Hitchcock is one of my greatest inspirations as well, because film back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s was true film, it was true art. And these days it's beautiful. Films can be very, very nice and very exciting, but it's so much is happening that mm-hmm. it's hard to really focus on the true acting, the true art behind the film.
And these days so much is doctored up, mm-hmm. whereas back in those days what you saw was what you got.
Exactly, what you saw. And there were if there was editing, it was you had to literally do the entire scene over again.
Yeah.
It wasn't like cut here, cut here, cut there. It was full on monologues that these characters mm-hmm. were having, and it's you don't see that much these days.
And there were some people like Frank Sinatra that had it stated in the contract that I'm doing one take, boom.
Wow.
And of course he could get away with it, or Frank, and very few people could, or in some cases maybe two, but not five or six or ten.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what you get from me for the money.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I've been doing some short films and stuff, and especially lately, and I had to redo the scene at least 10 times because they want to mm-hmm. get different cuts and different versions, which is great. But
different, they're doing it for the sake of angles, right?
Yes, not
so
for
you're
the
repeating
sake of
the same thing.
Yeah, not for the sake of mistaken
right.
words or anything, or script. But it is interesting because you know, back then it was one point of view. So you're just watching from one mm-hmm. perspective. And these days it's like, okay, I have to get the upward angle and the up top, the bird's eye view, and then yeah. in, you know, between the microphone, which it's just kind of like, okay.
It's kind of like we become so restless that we got to see it all.
And see every ankle, like make sure it's really happening.
What did his left ear look like when he said hello? I need to know.
Exactly.
So. Yeah, it's amazing. And it's kind of a sad statement for the arts in general. I mean, there's certainly a lot of amazing things that technology today can do that we could never do before. And, you know, both in cinema as well as on live stage and so on. But for the most part, I truly hope that the character, true character mm-hmm. and true talent is what we hold up as mm-hmm. opposed to doctoring it up.
Yeah, that's why I try to watch award shows like the Academy Awards, because I do feel like the people who win those awards are very, very good actors mm-hmm. and they're true to the art. And it just so happens they might be in films that kind of fancy up everything, but they're brilliant in their own work. And yeah. those are people that I look up to. I don't look to reality television for any kind of inspiration, because it's just...
That usually shows you the worst side of human nature.
Yeah, it does.
Well, you know, Nicole, talking about Lucille Ball, she became a television star when she was probably 35 years old or older, because she was in the movie. She was a model first and then in motion pictures, and she was a singer with her husband, Desi Arnaz, mm-hmm. With his band, and they had a stage show. And this was all before the television show
wow.
that started about 1951 or 52.
Mm-hmm.
I saw her in person with her husband, wow. with the band, Desi Arnaz. You know, he played mm-hmm. the bongos.
He was really talented as well.
He was.
No doubt.
He had a big band. It was a 20-piece orchestra, and she was the singer. And they had just gotten married, and this was after World War II.
Wow.
And I was very young, but they had a terrific stage show. And I remember them saying that they were auditioning and getting ready for the Lucille Ball Desi Arnaz show, which mm-hmm. was going to be put on television. And no one really knew how funny it was going to become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people don't realize that maybe she was middle-aged when she started her career with television.
Mm-hmm.
And those people old enough to remember that, they do.
And practically all of those episodes are classics. I mean,
you can't improve
on them.
Absolutely. And I was having a conversation with my mom a couple days ago, and we were saying, well, she was telling me that Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz just took over Hollywood.
Yeah, pretty much. Desilu Productions.
Yeah, right. They just became this entity together that mm-hmm. everyone looked up to, everyone loved, and you know, they were brilliant. And it's funny, like, I actually was looking through the old classic episodes a couple days ago, and my favorite, I think it's everyone's favorite, was the chocolate episode.
Oh, God.
The chocolate on the conveyor belt was so funny. So, but since something simple as that,
yeah.
you know, there's nothing fancy, there's no weird angles, nothing, no CGI going on. It's just simple, raw acting, raw comedy, and it was brilliant.
You know somebody that we tend to overlook these days? Buster Keaton.
He's another one.
Talk about Chaplin before Chaplin, I mean, in so many ways.
And
some of the amazing antics, very similar to
Ray Bolger.
Yeah.
Harold Lloyd was another comic actor in the movie.
Stuff that even goes back to before they had sound.
Wow.
So which was kind of what Charlie Chaplin and those people came through. Mm-hmm. They wanted to be able to entertain you without saying anything
yeah.
because audio had not been that developed yet.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think of all these things that went into it and how it still communicates today,
mm-hmm.
it's completely amazing.
It's interesting, too, because, you know, these days we have technology, and it's actually quite funny because there's an app that I have on my iPhone. Actually, I think I got rid of it, but it was an app that I had, and it was, I think it was called Movie Phone or something like mm-hmm. that, and you can do the classic films. You could just go around and use your phone, capture like a 3-minute video, and then input it into a classic 1950s theme with the music. You could speed it up, you could make it silent, add the little like,
that's,
you know,
pretty wild.
And I did that actually. I sent it to a couple of my friends. They were like, Nicole, you are so silly.
Yeah.
But
I can see that being fun to do, though.
Yeah,
having already a pre-established medium to play with.
But it's funny that we need technology now to go all the way back to how it just was so simple in the 30s.
I think we've come to depend on technology in a very dangerous way.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And then I think we really need to take a deep breath and maybe rethink that a little
mm-hmm.
bit.
It's necessary, of course, but it's
yeah.
in some senses, but it's not in other senses.
But think of what would, and I'm not trying to create any darknesses, but think of what would happen if electricity was suddenly no more.
Mm-hmm. I've thought about that many times.
All that stuff would be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd actually have to get up on our feet and cultivate an imagination and use personal skills.
And know how to go outside and grow some food, because most people even rely on going to the grocery store for fast food for
everything. You ask some people, what are you going to do if there's ever a drought, or if we ever hit hard times? Oh, I'll just buy canned vegetables. Where do you think they go get into the can from?
Eventually you'll run out of canned food, so that's funny.
So get off that cell phone sometime during the day and take a breath.
Mm-hmm.
Or that computer or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So of course this emulsion of characters that you are, that we essentially all are in our many different ways, all these split personalities, I think they take on strange titles when it becomes a psychological concern.
Mm-hmm.
But all these elements are part of your creative genius in writing Ingrid Darling.
Yes, of course. And all the concerns that I have for society, for things that I see around me, I purposely put into the book, because it's something that it's something that I see on an everyday basis, and it's mm-hmm. something that I wanted my main character to see as well. So she interacts with her friends, she has conversations with her friends about some of the similar things we're talking about right now. So that's I try to keep an element of reality to it, which is they're sitting in a cafe, talking, having a discussion about Marxism over coffee, and because it's something that would happen somewhere in the world.
The Bohemian era did plenty of that. Yeah.
Yeah, between two people or three or four. And so I try to keep that element of reality to it with fictional characters that are some sort of amalgamation of myself, I guess. I don't really know. So, but yeah, I like to use the world around me and everything inside of me to sort of create my own works, and that's what I did with Ingrid Darling.
And I know I asked you earlier before where the name came from, and you said you wanted a name that had the initials ID, like...
Yes, because the character is essentially trying to discover her true identity.
Coming into her own, so to speak.
In a world full of chaos and technology, she's trying to figure... Yeah. And distractions, she's trying to figure herself out, so she's trying to find her ID. Ingrid was the first I name that came to my head, and
it's a good name. I like it.
And darling is a fun thing. My mom and I talk in British accents, and we'll be like, "Oh, darling."
Yeah.
So I thought it would be fun to have as a last name, and I use it sort of as a play on words throughout
the book.
It's catchy.
Mm-hmm. So give us all the contact information one more time for the book, Ingrid Darling.
Yes, it's available on Amazon.com as well as BarnesandNoble.com. And it's also available in bookstores, the Regulator Bookstore in Durham, North Carolina, and Quailer Ridge Bookstore in Raleigh, North Carolina.
And your website,
My website is www.nicole-burgess.com.
And in case you lose track of all that, you can go to claudioarts.com and I'll fill you in. Again, the show should be podcast within a couple of days, and it's downloadable for free, and it gets picked on worldwide, so there's no telling who's going to hear what we've put out today. I want to thank you folks for joining me. Thank you, Nicole Burgess. Thank you, Nicole's dad.
Yes, my dad.
He's here. And, of course, Rocco. And thank you folks for tuning in. Our motto here is, you keep us tuned in and we'll keep you turned on. This is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater signing off. Until next time, cheers.